once again to EWTN's Bookmark. I'm Doug Keck, your host. Our guest author, Dr. John Sottosanti. His book, Mortal Adhesions, A Surgeon Battles the Seven Deadly Sins to Find Faith, Happiness, and Inner Peace. And it's available through our EWTN religious catalog, EWTNRC.com, for all things Catholic. Welcome, Doctor. EWTN's Bookmark. People would have seen you with Jim and Joy on that particular program. Is this your first book?
It is my first book.
And now this is like a biography then?
Yeah, it's a long memoir is really what it is, because it doesn't cover my whole life. I actually stopped it 20 years ago.
What made you decide to write a book?
I decided to write a book because of the changes in my life that took place involving God. My dad came from Italy, was very poor, and he always told me, to get respect, you're going to need two things. You're going to need a doctorate degree and money, and those go together. And so I took that seriously, and I made a lot of money by the time I was age 40.
Right.
But I didn't have any happiness. I mean, I had a wonderful wife and family,
right,
but the stresses that I experienced with all the empire that I had built up,
right,
really weighed me down. And I finally, one night, called out to God and said, God, if you're up there, all I want is inner peace. And with that one submission, my life began slowly changing, actually starting the very next day.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the introduction here, to talk about a program, the Yale's Happiness Course.
Right.
What's Yale's Happiness Course?
Well, that's the big thing today. Everybody wants happiness,
right,
because there's so much despair. And Yale, in 2018, started a happiness course that you would attend, and it sold out immediately. And then COVID hit in 2000. So they put it online for free, and well over a million people signed up and took the course. So out of curiosity, I took a look at the course, and it was things like meditation, making a gratitude list, all the things that I had tried in the 80s. And those didn't work. And in fact, I find them somewhat shallow.
Right.
They're good things in by themselves, but in terms of depth, it's just not there.
Right. Let me ask you, I mean, you were originally from Connecticut. You talk about being brought up there. You ended up ultimately in California, right?
Right.
So were you out there during the kind of the touchy-feely encounter movement kind of time, or a little bit post that?
Yeah, kind of to some extent. The Air Force brought me out in the 70s.
Right. Now, you did make a marriage encounter, so I got that connection
with
you.
Yeah, I did do a marriage encounter as soon as I got out there, which is good.
And you found that beneficial?
Very beneficial. Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't, for the good or the bad, for the poor viewers of EWTN, if it wasn't for Marriage Encounter, I wouldn't be here, so.
Well, my wife says it saved our marriage, so,
right,
and we've been married over 50 years.
So. Right, so likewise, it would be it's something that people, if they haven't thought about it, we'd like to promote it, along with the Curcio.
That's Curcio's another thing, fantastic.
Another great thing
changed
that people
too
haven't had. Now, one of the people here, I had to call Father Robert Spitzer, because I realized you were stealing all his material at the beginning of this book. Is he aware of this?
Well, I did put his name there, but one of the things that I try to do is make this book.
And you know him. He's a friend.
I've actually known him 20 years.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Because my sister-in-law worked at Gonzaga University, right in his office.
Okay.
So I met him at Gonzaga. But I did not say Father Robert Spitzer in there. And the reason being is I wrote the book for not only devout Catholics and lukewarm Catholics, I wrote it for non-Catholics and those nuns that are looking for religion. And surprisingly, a number of them are picking it up.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's in a lot of bookstores yet, but I've had people pick it up. A Mormon fellow actually get in touch with me and say, I was intrigued by a scientist finding God because I have an analytical mind and I just, having a hard time with it. And he said, the Mormon religion doesn't seem quite right for me.
Right.
So he said, I'm going to read your book. He got in touch with me through LinkedIn. And then 2 weeks later, he said, I finished your book and it's changed my life.
Right.
So I figured if I put too much biblical material in the beginning of the book, people would say that that's not for me.
Okay, I got it.
The reason why you don't see it loaded.
This guy's born again or something.
Right.
Right. Now, you talked about your parent, John and Francis, in the 4th of July fireworks show. Did that have a big impact on you growing up?
It did. They fought all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they fought for 52 years. Until they got divorced.
Right. Now, there was some rapprochement at the very end, right, with him?
There was.
When he kind of came out.
It was a little bit of a miracle type thing.
And he had that miracle kind of coming out of a coma, similar to what Father Spitzer talks about, end-of-life experiences here, right?
It was. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. The doctor called me and said, you better head over here. I mean, Dad had been in a very deep coma for a couple of weeks. He said, I can't believe it. Your dad is breathing on his own. He's alert, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I went over there immediately and said, Dad, do you want to see Mom? I called on the phone because they were separated. And I got Mom there over there, and Dad got out of a wheelchair, hadn't been out of bed in a month, got up, walked across the room and hugged Mom, and tears streamed down both of their faces. Right, right. It was a beautiful experience.
Right. Now, what made you decide to play the accordion? And you had a kind of unusual experience you recount in this.
In Connecticut, the Italians kids have to play the accordion. Okay. But we were United States champions, the big band that I played with, the Rudy Molinaro Studio of Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Now you also mentioned a thing. One of your accordion friends got a little overly friendly.
Right.
Why did you decide to bring that up?
Because later on, it kind of tied in with the church situation. At the very, very end, when I had the conversion of a Lutheran, she and I went back and forth, and she questioned the sexual issue of the Catholic Church. And I said, "Well, it was a terrible issue, and there's a lot of reasons for it." I said, "You know, many other organizations like Boy Scouts, school teachers, et cetera, have the same problem."
Right, right, right.
And I said, the press loves to blow it up as if the Catholic Church is the only
invented
one.
Invented it or something.
Right. And right, I said, if you really look at the incidents and what actually took place, most of it was touching over clothes.
Mm-hmm, right.
And that in this particular incident with the accordion player, the same type of thing.
Was he the same age as you? Were older?
Yeah, same age as me. But I just, you know, glared at him and said, don't you ever do that again. And, and he kept his distance. So.
Right. I thought it was, you said when you went to Penn, there was a concern because you were devoid of the protection of your mother, and would I be ready? What protection was that?
Oh, she was, they call her a helicopter mother today.
Okay, okay.
You know, we used to sprinkle a little bit. She didn't want me to get wet in the rain, so she'd drive to the school, and I would go out the back door and go home a different way because I didn't want the kids to see me getting into Mom's big car.
Right. Now, you also taught, you joined, what, ATO?
Right, Ophthalmic Makeup.
I was a TKE.
Yeah.
But it was interesting that your mother prayed to St. Jude every day for you.
Yeah, right, she did. She called
Why'd
me
you
hopeless.
Pick St. Jude
Hopeless
for you?
Case, okay. Is what she said. You're hopeless, John, you're hopeless. As soon as I left high school and went off to college, you know, church, confession, everything went out the door.
Yeah, you said, I've been at Penn for over 3 months and never felt the need to enter a house of worship except to please Mary Ann. Who's Mary Ann?
Well, Mary Ann sent me a Dear John letter right before my finals and I couldn't study. And I didn't, normally I feel I can handle my own
problems.
She
was the one who went away for this over some period of time to let you know that she had kind of decided against you.
Yeah, well, she came out to a weekend and saw what was going on in the ATO house with all the
That's
drinking and everything else,
yeah.
And said, you know, basically, you're not my kind of person anymore.
Right.
And it happened right before finals, and I couldn't study.
Right.
And so I found the Newman Chapel, which I hadn't found before, went in there and prayed for 2 solid hours. I didn't know I was praying before the Eucharist, but the red light was on.
Right.
And at the end of 2 hours, this unbelievable peace came over me, and I was able to get through finals fine.
Now, both of your parents were Catholic, right?
Mom was a devout Catholic. My father was an engineer who would go to church and study. He was studying
the
beams.
Look at the ceiling, right? You were talking about, right?
Exactly,
he was looking at the
did.
Ceiling, right?
And he also parked his car out in front because it was a nice car, and he washed it and wanted everybody know that he had a newer car.
I mean, the old joke used to be in the old days that you'd go to a parish like that, and all the guys are outside smoking,
right?
Basically, and Mom's inside with the kids.
It's very similar.
It was kind of where you ended up. Because I was wondering what, you know, if your knowledge of the faith was limited or just the kind of thing where you kind of took it when you were a kid and then you just kind of said, as you say here, who needs God when you can control your own destiny? God is but the fabrication of needy humanity, and according to Karl Marx, the opiate of the masses. Sounds like Feuerbach with the, we made God in our own image because we needed somebody.
I got a little bit of Baltimore catechism, but the nuns knew that I didn't take it too seriously.
Okay. How could they tell?
Well, just I talk about kneeling a lot because in the tomb of San Juan de Ortega late in the book, I knelt on concrete with a really bruised knee. And I always hated to kneel. I think my knees are just bony. And so I would never kneel when they asked us to kneel. I mean, I would kind of slouch forward and sit on the pew and drop my knees down close to the pew, but that's the way it was.
Mm-hmm. The sisters didn't get the clicker out.
well, they scared
now, you
us.
Met somebody named Margaret, and you say, and she was Catholic. I wasn't consciously looking for Catholic women, although I understood what Freud believed, that men seek their mother's traits in the women they choose. So what was the aspect of your mom that you saw in her? Her faith?
Yeah, I think so. The goodness, the basic goodness, kindness.
And you were in D.C. at the time then because of the Basilica of
National
Shrine?
I went to Georgetown.
Okay, okay. And what were you studying there at the time?
Well, it was the first 2 years, medicine and dentistry were together. Eventually, I went off to the dental part, but then came back to doing surgery in graduate school in Los Angeles. So most of my career was doing surgery every day.
Mm-hmm. Now, who was Father Marino?
Who was it, Father Marino in terms of the priest that married
us? Yeah, a little funny story you talk about, I guess, the day you were married, right?
Yeah, I always talk about that because typically I always wanted to go to the shortest mass. Mm-hmm. I met this group.
You found the right priest.
Yeah, he was off to the racetrack, evidently.
Aqueduct.
I found out from a friend.
Right. But, that's right. This is pre-OTB, I guess, or something.
Yeah.
He didn't have to harry the horse OTB. You talk about that Margaret had gained remarkable faith through her Catholic education, knowledge of scriptures, and Sunday sermons. I had difficulty understanding Margaret's religious faith because it was something I lacked. I'd made fun of the nuns in my Catholic Baltimore Catechism class, daydream during Mass. Your focus was to get ahead, make money, accumulate honors, prestige, a lovely home, fancy car, enjoy yourself. Then at the end of your life, you could be proud of what you accomplished. Sounds like very 80s kind of whoever dies with the most toys wins kind of thing.
I have a friend that had that T-shirt.
Right.
But my father taught me all that because, you know, our dad came over at age 6 and they didn't have any money at all. Chapter 1, he's pulling a wagon along the railroad tracks at age 7 to put coal that was dropped from the train so they could heat the house at night. That's how poor they were.
You were a lot happier on the train than you were walking alongside.
Yeah, of course, there's a story in itself. Right. That was Dad's story of going to school in New York, living in Greenwich, Connecticut, but never paying for the fare on the train because he hid in the toilet room when the conductor came by. So I did have that type of dad who was wonderful in his own way.
Is that what you're talking about, the idea, if I read it right, in a sense of the ability to lie or tell untruths if it gets you where you need to go to?
Right.
Okay.
People call them white lies.
Right,
white lies are just absolutely fine. You can't get ahead in this country if you don't tell them.
What happens in Las Vegas, I guess, supposedly stays there, but I guess you recount some of it here.
Some of it, yeah.
You've encountered a statement from Winston Churchill. The truth is incontrovertible. Malice may attack it, ignorance may deride it, but in the end, there it is. Personally, I didn't always tell the truth because I'd learned from my father that lies could get you out of trouble unless they're revealed for what they are. So that kind of ties right into that.
Very much so.
So when you were in Las Vegas, were you telling lies or experiencing things or tempted by things? Were you in the military at the time?
I was in the Air Force.
Okay.
And actually, I'm proud of joining forces with 4 other junior dental officers to take on the entire United States Air Force, in which we had a commander that was mistreating patients for his own benefit.
Really?
Yeah, he figured out.
What would it be? Go ahead, explain.
The Air Force came up with a system at that point in time, a numbering system, in which they assigned points to procedures. And so he figured out how many points he could get for every procedure performed in the clinic. And if the procedure took long but got few points, we were told we couldn't do it, even if it meant extraction of teeth.
What was the benefit of the points? Is that from a promotional thing?
Yeah, he felt that if he had the number one clinic in the country in terms of productivity, he would eventually make colonel, and he had been passed over 2 or 3 times.
Okay, so that.
So we actually risked going to jail, dishonorable discharge, to correct that, so.
Right. Chapter 12, we hit the 7 deadlies, which you allude to in the topic, in the title of the book, you say here. I began to enjoy the Las Vegas shows, gambling, and buffets while slowly growing aware of my susceptibility to Sin City, but I didn't care. the priest at Guardian Angel Cathedral, up in there, only blocks away from the strip, accepted casino chips in a collection basket while he preached on the seven deadly sins: pride, greed, lust, envy, gluttony, and wrath. I don't think they accept them anymore. I think they changed that a number of years ago. I guess they felt like maybe that wasn't particularly
a good idea
with what, like you were saying, the juxtaposition of what they were preaching versus what they were willing to take.
Exactly. You know? That's funny.
Right. Then you quote here, in Mere Christianity, C.S. Lewis denounces pride as the great sin. I could now recall instances when my own feelings of pride and self-righteousness aroused, for example, by the disagreement with Lieutenant Rigby over the pine trees at Keesler
Air Force Base, Mississippi.
Explain.
Hurricane Camille hit Mississippi when
I was there. Right, you mentioned that in the book, too.
And prior to the hurricane landing, I was really worried the hurricane would blow over the tall pine trees onto our houses.
Okay.
And my next door neighbor, military base housing, was Rigby. And he said, "You gotta be kidding. These things have been here 100 years, seen many hurricanes. They're not gonna fall." Mm-hmm. So I said to him, "I think they will." This was almost like a little mental bet. The hurricane came, three pine trees fell over in our mutual front yard, mm-hmm. all through his house. His kitchen,
okay.
His living room.
So is that karma or something there?
Well, I felt terrible in some ways, but on the other hand, my ego said, "Well, you were right." Once more, you were right.
Now, so did you win at card counting or get in trouble card counting?
Well,
or made a friend with a dealer,
right? The dealer was an Italian mafia type guy. And because
the Minta Smaller Casino, or where
is
that
downtown?
It's downtown, isn't it?
So
Fremont?
They had dollar bets, and they did that for a long time. But
is that why you went there? Because you figured it was a
I could afford the dollar. The most I could gamble with was 10. That's the deal I made with my wife.
Right.
But he was offering up waitresses and everything that you could possibly. So there was a lot of temptation in Sin City. It was the same then as it is today, evidently.
Right. Yeah, always try and figure out. And it must be that the people who work there or live there just kind of avoid it. But otherwise, it could suck you in easily.
It could easily. And I think people do avoid it if they live there. If they can.
Now, you talk about your anger as wrath. Why wrath?
Well, I just think that's more or less a synonym, for anger.
Mm-hmm. Is that the time that you were going to Japan? That was one of the.
My wife said I couldn't go because she just had a baby.
You're right.
And I said, "What do you mean I can't go? I've already made plans. I've told my friend Chet that we're going." And it was, that's the way I was at that time.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it popped up, it reared up its ugly head later on in the book when I went to Rio de Janeiro.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That was an interesting trip because I combined Rio de Janeiro, which was on the Las Vegas side of things, with a trip to see the Shroud of Turin. Mm. So I was lecturing a lot. So I went over to a meeting in Switzerland, the Shroud of Turin. It was only an hour and a half train ride away. Spent a beautiful time looking at that, then flew across the ocean.
Why were you attracted to look at that? Why did you?
Because of the science. I was searching for God.
Okay.
And now I had Curcio.
Okay.
So my eyes were open.
Okay, so you kind of had.
And the scientific.
Holy Spirit was whispering to you.
Right.
Okay.
And I was beginning to understand the Shroud of Turin in terms of its scientific.
You should talk to your friend, Father Paul.
Well,
he knows a little bit about that.
He does. I try not to steal too much of his information. Please tell him.
Now, L.A. Confidential, Chapter 14, you're in L.A. You're fascinated with the number of Hollywood celebrities in the L.A. area. Classic old actor Bill Lundigan shows up here and some other famous people. Rosemary Clooney's name shows up.
Angie Dickinson,
Burt Bacharach. So when you worked on them, were you working, you were doing oral surgery or
different
normal
degrees.
Dentistry?
Yeah, Bill Lundigan I worked on the most.
Okay.
He had gone through some tough times financially. He went into the Marines.
Yeah, you mentioned
and
that.
He almost ruined his career doing that. Great man. Good Catholic, by the way, as I try to point out in the book. I really saw that difference. Danny Thomas, the St. Jude Hospital?
Yes, Danny Thomas, yeah.
Exactly, good Catholic man.
Right, absolutely, His daughter should think of him a little more often when she's promoting some of the things she promotes.
Okay,
outside of St. Jude is wonderful, but she tends to be a big pro-abort.
Okay,
Now, the other thing I was going to ask you about that is you also, and you, I think it was during while you were training, then maybe during the military, you were also doing a certain amount of plastic surgery kind of thing.
That was
right?
in the training thing
right.
where we
okay.
did breast augmentation and facelifts.
Right.
Because, you know, we have to do a lot of cosmetic surgery in the mouth. Patient comes into me and they've got a receded gum. When they smile, okay. their tooth looks 5 millimeters longer. I've got to transplant tissue
I see.
From
okay.
an adjacent area to cover that root. So it's
right.
very similar.
Right. And so what was Burt Bacharach like?
I didn't like the fact that he would come in the office and tell dirty jokes to the staff.
No, okay. He wasn't whistling raindrops no. falling on my
no,
head.
No.
I know you alluded.
I alluded to that later.
Now, you say here right at the end, you talk about Angie Dickinson and Policewoman, you know, and an incident that kind of led you to think, is her self-esteem really so fragile? And you say, was being a Hollywood star worth it? Dad would undoubtedly say the money was.
Right.
But you were in conflict there yourself?
Well, she had an examination by myself and another doctor, mm-hmm. and we messed her hair up. Mm-hmm. And the fact that she spent 10, 15 minutes making sure the hair mm-hmm. was perfect before she walked by the students, it kind of amazed me. That she would care about that. She was everybody's idol at that
right.
point in time.
Right.
Why would she care about eight right. dental students?
So you really had a family business, right, when you were setting up, because you had your dad built your office
built
and your
office.
Mom was your receptionist.
Didn't pay her a penny.
Okay. Now, were they together at the time?
Yes.
Okay. So,
except for the 4th of July when they argued.
Okay. And then in around that time is the time when Marriage Encounter shows up.
Yes.
Was that your wife who said we should go on
yeah,
this?
Yeah, a neighbor friend.
Okay. That was all, yeah, what a lot of people went. And what was your big takeaway from that for you?
I rearranged my priorities. Mm-hmm. When I went there, my kids were the most important. I was coaching soccer and things like that with them. Margaret was second, and God was down third place.
Right.
I
okay.
reversed the order.
Right. Yeah, they kind of sometimes ask you what you spend your time on versus what you say
right.
is the most important thing to you. Now, on that same level, so you knew Chuck Gallagher, at least met Father Chuck Gallagher?
Yeah.
He was really the one who built up Worldwide
well,
Marriage Encounter.
There were two Chuck Gallaghers. I'm not sure I knew the original Chuck Gallagher.
No, I think if you did, it was Marriage Encounter.
Yeah, it was Marriage Encounter, yeah.
He was the one who really took it, because there was Marriage Encounter came out of Spain. And then
right.
Worldwide Marriage Encounter with the follow-up was something that Chuck Gallagher and people from Long Island, actually
yeah.
couples on Long Island, created. So that, I'm sure when you're talking about then he tells the story about Joe without the wedding ring and how things
right.
go.
Yeah.
And then you kind of relate to how that was something that you were falling into and maybe...
When I met the beautiful movie star.
Star, right, exactly. And so how that helped you to realize, you know, and then you also have, for those of us who remember Animal House, Tom Hulce's famous scene where he's trying to decide the two angels on his...
Yeah, it was the angel on
one
shoulder
side,
and
the devil
on the other shoulder.
Right. Yeah, devil on
and I had to make a big decision that day, and I made the right one.
Right. You actually brought her home.
Well, I called my wife. Well, what happened was she asked at the end of treatment, she said, I can't drive home. Do you know of a good local motel? And I thought, that's very, this is a beautiful movie star. See, mm-hmm. I won't use the real name and I won't use the director's name who you would know, mm-hmm. the big name director. And I called Margaret and said, honey, I have a movie star who cannot drive back to LA. Can we bring her home? Could you make dinner for us? And Margaret, being the good person that she is, did mm-hmm. do that. Mm-hmm. And the angel won.
So Long John Neville, I haven't heard that name in years.
I remember that.
Oh, sure, his talk
away.
Show. And talking about occult peculiarities and Ghostbusters, why did you bring that up?
Well, you know, later on, there's stuff in there I bring in. I used to listen to him. I had that incident with my panic attack. Did
right.
you remember even about that?
Right.
It was the middle of the night, and it was like I had a flashback to Long John Neville and some of the strange people he brought onto
right.
the show.
Mm-hmm.
Edgar, then there'd be an Edgar Allan Poe reading.
Right.
And I was lost in the cave with the water rising with my sons, I brought in the cask of Amontillado.
Right, exactly. Were you bricking it up at the time or trying to get out? But did you actually buy a car called Christine or just was similar?
It was similar. The thing was haunted.
Yeah. Stephen, you talk about that.
That thing was really haunted. I mean, there was a used car with 4,000 miles on it.
This was a Mercedes-Benz, right?
It was a Mercedes-Benz. It had 5 accidents in 4 months, of which I was not either driving or somebody ran a red light and ran into me. Actually, I was going the speed limit of 50 miles an hour, and she ran into me head on at 20, so it was like hitting a brick wall at 70. Lucky I'm alive from that.
Right.
And then as soon as I got rid of it, it had another accident after they fixed it up. Mm-hmm. An attorney called me and thought it was still my car and said it had a hit-and-run accident in Los Angeles.
Really?
And it ran a red light, demolished a pickup truck, ran through a gas station, hit the pumps, still went on, and somebody got the license plate number. The thing was unbelievable.
Right.
But it actually taught me.
Still out there to this very day, maybe.
It could be.
You never know.
It could be.
What did it teach you? I'm sorry.
Well, you know, EWTN has that Saturday morning book about the spirit world.
Mm. Yeah,
very
the radio
interesting.
Show, right.
Very
right,
interesting.
Right. That's right.
Find it fascinating. Evil spirits do attach themselves to things.
Right. Absolutely.
And they had attached themselves to that car. Even my Catholic wife, who really didn't believe in hauntings and things like that, she would not let me get back into the car after the major accident.
Right. Okay. Well, let me ask you, what's been the reaction been to the book?
It's been very interesting, very exciting. And what has been a joy is to see people from devout Catholics all the way to non-believers. Right. A Jewish friend told me that he read the book, found it a page turner, and referred it to two friends.
Yeah, they're going to turn it into a script. You never know.
Do you know somebody?
Yeah, no, but you do. Okay.
Pleasure, Doug. Thank you very much.
Dr. John Sottosanti and his book, Mortal Adhesions, A Surgeon Battles the 7 Deadly Sins to Find Faith and Happiness and Inner Peace. Available through our EWTN religious catalog. An interesting read. Check it out. Check us out next time right here on EWTN's Bookmark. Thanks.